Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
I declare this is the Summer of Love Part 2. Suddenly it's 1967. That's what we're playing, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band now on the Savage Nation. I mean, I feel like so spaced out from the whole situation of the news, boring, from the fact that Obama is what he is and everyone knows it and nothing's going to change anyway. You know what I'm saying? And it's summertime. No one cares. So I refuse to mention my being banned by the new UK government. I refuse to mention the scapegoating of Michael Savage. I refuse to talk about my being banned in Britain. I refuse to talk about the fact that I am a test case. I refuse to talk about the fact that none of the people in the major media will talk about this. I refuse to talk about the fact that the AP will not report on it. Instead, we're going to do the Summer of Love Part 2. I have a perception and reality issue that I want to talk with you about. Perception versus reality. Now, what do I mean by that? I have a perception about Barack Hussein Obama that he is a distinct radical, revolutionary, and a Marxist, and I was the first one in the media to point that out. Now, is my perception reality? Or is it simply my biases imposing themselves on my perception and upon the reality of who Obama really is? Okay? So let's analyze it. Why would the man who was the president of the United States continue to appoint people in the middle of the night to major positions? And why would he appoint czars bypassing the Senate? Why would he take over one company after another? Now, I can go down the list. In that regard, I'm using an analysis of the facts rather than my own perceptions and my biases. So, in other words, my perceptions are correct. They're not based upon my biases. And therefore, Obama is a Marxist radical. Now, the reason I'm saying this is that I know in my own personal life that I often have a confused, distorted view of people who I don't see. In other words, it's very easy to send off a hateful or angry email. And you can start a war with them over nothing. It's the same for relatives who aren't living near you. How many times have you gotten angry at a relative through email or on the phone? They didn't call you. They didn't return a call. And you start to change your picture of them, right? And you demonize them. And then when you see them, it's a different reality and you love them again, whether it's your parents or your children or your aunt or your uncle. It's the same with politicians and the same with talk show hosts. In other words, your perceptions of Michael Savage, what are your perceptions of Michael Savage? And what are they based upon? What are they based upon? Are they based upon your biases? And do they alter your reality of who Michael Savage is? You don't know who I am, and I don't know who you are. What I am saying is a direct meeting of people is the most important thing at a point of view, whether it's on a world stage in order to avert a war. In other words, diplomacy, very important. It's the same in business. It's the same in interpersonal relations. It's the same in family. But I want to get back to perception versus reality and our biases imposing themselves upon our perception and changing reality. When it comes to the president, and am I being overly harsh in calling him a Marxist or Leninist? I decide you report this is the Savage Nation. Suddenly, it's 1967. This is the Summer of Love Part 2. We have an endless war as we did in Vietnam in 67. We have a shaky Democrat president who's about to either retire at the end of one term, saying his position is untenable, or he'll be thrown out after one term. The economy is in hell, and the people are reverting to drug, sex, and rock and roll. So play a little more of the Beatles music. We're open for business on the Savage Nation, 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com, whatever. Whatever. Must be the after effects of the dermatologist burning off another cancer. I think it's the nitrous oxide that must have affected. What is they use that stuff? I hate it. You know, people say that when they freeze it off on your head, the precancerous lesion, that it's not toxic. Are they crazy? If something is toxic enough to burn off a precancerous lesion, don't you assume it has some other deeper effect upon you? People don't realize what effects drugs and medicines are having upon them in our society. Half the society is whacked out on one medication or another. I'm affected by an aspirin, for God's sakes. I don't know about you. I see in the latest poll that whatever the poll is now, but who's running for office already in 2012, I got to put up with this for 2 years now. I can't believe it. How many years am I going to hear about the election coming up? So in the latest poll now about who's going to be the president, it says that, where is this one around here? Dem 2012 poll. Obama trails against Romney and Gingrich and Huckabee, tied with Palin. Well, I'm going to tell you right now, if Gingrich wins, if Newt Gingrich.com wins, I'm leaving the country. If Newt Gingrich Khan can win the election, I'm leaving America. It's a country not worthy of me. If that guy who I called names in my book can actually win, I'm leaving America, then it means all of my work has been futile. It's bad enough having Obama. But could you imagine if we had Newt Gingrich Part 2? What's this with the Apple iPhone? I don't even own one. I'm still using the equivalent of the Royal Portable cell phone. I mean, people laugh at me. I'm one of these older guys. I have a cell phone like a Nokia from years ago. I refuse to get rid of it because I know how to use it. Like, I hide it now when I take it. I feel ashamed. It's like hiding pornography 30 years ago. When I pull out this phone, I go into like a closet. I shade it underneath a hat. I don't want anyone to see my handheld device. They snicker at me. All these young people running around with the oracles in their hand, they think that they're geniuses. They have a device in their hand and they move their hand left, right, up, down, this, press, that. And suddenly they think they're Einstein. It's amazing to me. No, I don't have one of those things. So what's this with the antenna? It doesn't work? Why doesn't it work? I thought Apple was the apple of America's eye. Now what is it? What is it? The apple is at work. Where is the apple is losing money? The antenna cuts off a call. Can you imagine a girl being cut off when she's talking about her shoes? That's a real loss to America, isn't it? Can you imagine some of these yentas talking about the way they're going tonight, what they're going to do shopping? It's unbelievable to me what people talk about on cell phones. They can take cell phones and throw them in the garbage as far as I'm concerned. Ah, what's the use? Senate passed a sweeping bank bill. Good. What am I supposed to say? They shouldn't have. First of all, what they passed is mild. That's number one. But the Republicans are screaming, oh, it's communism, the worst thing on earth. How dare you control the banks? Yeah, right. Okay. It's all crocodile tears. We needed a little bill, but we needed a stronger one. Favors interests of unions and activists. Big deal. J.P. Morgan Chase reports 77% rise in profit. I like that. I think banks should make money. In fact, I am glad banks are making money. I think it's good when banks make money, because if the banks weren't making money, there'd be no banks. And if there were no banks, you'd have to put your money under a mattress. So why do you continuously bash corporations and banks? I don't understand that. Where did that enter into the analysis of the average person? The banks are no good. I go back to when I was 11, 12 years old and I had my first bank account. To this day, I can remember the Bankers Trust Company account. I kept it on a bank on Union Turnpike at 186th Street in Queens, New York. I'd work as a soda jerk, a babysitter, or this or that, my father. I made 50, 75 cents an hour. And I was one of these kids who saved most of it. I put it in the bank. When that bank account, I used to go there, they'd print it. Somehow when they hit it in the machine and it come back, I felt like I made money when they would raise it from, you know, like $193. Suddenly it was $197 at the end of that day. At the end of that week, I put in $7 or whatever. When I hit $700, I thought that I was approaching that of a millionaire. To have $700 in a bank account when you're 12 years old, I'm talking about in the 1950s, I like banks. I always had a good feeling about going into a bank. I don't know, where'd you get the idea banks are no good, that they're all evil? The same place you heard that all corporations are evil. Don't open a box store in my neighborhood. Why? Why not open a box store? It provides jobs and it provides goods at a low price, schmuck. What do you want to do? Have like moldy health food stores everywhere with chlamydia girls with mustaches behind the counter? That's your idea of a perfect nation? Moldy health food stores with old zucchini with women with chlamydia serving you. That's your idea of a real neighborhood store. You want to talk about perception versus reality? You want to talk about the summer? You want to talk about the summer of love? I refuse to mention my being banned in England. I mean, there's great articles that have come out. But I'm not going to talk about it because then you're going to get the wrong perception of me. You see what I'm talking about? If I talked about being banned in England again today, oh, he's pretending, he's crying wolf, always making believe he's being picked on, always playing the martyr. Well, all right, so I'm not going to let you do that. I'm not going to let you stereotype me. But you name one other person in America in the media who's been banned from a Western nation, and I'll stop talking about it. How's that? Does that work for you? And by the way, one last thing. What if Hannity or O'Reilly or Limbaugh, would it be banned from entering Britain for something they allegedly said? Do you think the Associated Press might cover it? You think it might be heard about? Yeah, I think so. So when they came for the savage, I didn't raise my voice because I didn't know any savages, etc., and so on, and that's it. And that's the end of the story. You want to read about it, follow it on the website. It doesn't make for good radio at a certain point. I don't want to hear it anymore. So that means you don't want to hear it anymore. That's all there is to it. So if you want to talk about Newt Gingrich Khan running for office, go ahead. Remember when Newt Gingrich Khan was the Speaker of the House, how brilliant we thought he was? And he put out the thing for America. What was it called? The Attack on America? I don't know what he called it, something else. The Contract for America, the emphasis on the word con. It was really a con for America because of the 10 things he had in it, only one passed, and that was welfare reform. In other words, they attacked the poorest of the poor. Everything else didn't get passed. Remember that? I mean, I trust him as much as I trust Gerald Nadler. Let's put it to you that way. How in the world could you ever think that Newt Gingrich could beat Obama? How in the world can you believe that Gingrich would be a good president? Why would he even be running? Don't these people ever stop? It's like watching the Rolling Stones. Can't they retire already? Can't they just move to Boca Raton and get transfusion trees and rockers and stop trying to be young and rock and roll artists? It sickens me. When I see geriatric 70-year-old guys up there doing rock and roll, stop it already. You're not a talk show host. We can do this till we're 85. You cannot be a rock and roll star at 75. It's disgusting. It's embarrassing. You look like Joan Rivers in a pair of pants. All right? It's enough, Ray. Like Newt Gingrich. You lost already. Move aside. Let a new generation come up, Newt. Stop being a hog. That's my opinion. We've seen you. We saw what you did to the country. Let someone from the Tea Party run for office. Not Newt Gingrich anymore. Okay, well, what the hell do you want to talk about? Am I allowed to say hell, or is that was bleated already out of the show? I can't say hell. I don't know what I can say anymore. I'm allowed to say hell free. I'll answer you when hell freezes over. Is that illegal now in America? Can I be sued for that? Can I be banned from hell? If I say, I'll answer that when hell freezes over. Can I be banned from hell? If so, I think I will say I'll do that when hell freezes over. I'll be right back.
Savage.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
So that's it. So now that I'm free of politics, I can talk about my... I can talk about anything. I think I'm going to talk about Teddy in the restaurant right now. So last night, I was off the air, as you know. I went to two doctors, minor stuff, nothing. I'm not at a point yet in my life where I actually like going to the doctor, but some people make a whole thing out of it. They look forward to it. Usually retired people on Medicare, Medicaid, and the environment love going to the doctor because they're not paying for it, and they get doctors to look at them, talk to them, and how are you? And I've felt a cringe here. Where exactly? Here, under the arm, right? No, on the other side. And they'd like the doctor to touch them because no one else would look at them. They're decrepit. They're old. And it's for free. You know, if you paid a $25 copayment, 95% of doctor visits would end in America. They're mainly people from Boca Raton who vote in three or four districts at once on the five different names. They're the ones who keep the Democrats in power. They go to the early bird dinner at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and they have special trick raincoats with plastic pockets where they take home the meatballs, the sweet and low, the bread, the butter, you know, the extra stuff. They're the same people who go to the doctors for nothing. It's the way it is because it's free, and they have nothing else to do. So I can't say I actually enjoy going to the doctor. One was a dentist to look at a tooth. The other was a dermatologist to burn something off the hand. I'm making up for all of the years I sat in the sun watching giraffes fornicate at the Honolulu Zoo in my early years. You know what I'm saying? Okay. The wages of sin are death. I recognize that. But it's true for all of us because we all die. Ha ha. So let's move on. So at the end of the day, I had a nice day, by the way, after the doctors. I had lunch in the greasy Chinese restaurant, which I absolutely love because I don't know. It's like part of my life. I go in there strictly to have my lips sticking together and say, why do I eat here every day? I mean, why do I do this once a week? The answer is because it's part of my life, and it hasn't killed me yet, and I enjoy it. All right, so then at the end of the day, it's like a horse going to a stable or a cow rather goes to a stable at the end of the day on the farm. You know that my father told me, you know, my father was a, did you know my father rode a wagon in this country with a horse on it? He went back so far in time, he told me when he was 13 years old, he actually had a wagon with a horse on it. That's where the word teamster comes from. They actually teamster horses, teams. So anyway, he was a little kid. He had a laundry route with a wagon at 13. And the horse jumped, I don't know, in cobblestone streets. I don't know, it fell off the thing and a spike went through his foot. So now I'll bring you up to today. So like he told me, like cows, at the end of a day, they get tired from the pasture. It's boring. There's no TV in the pasture. There's no cell phones. There's no iPhones, nothing. All day long in the hot sun, grinding up grass. They can't wait for the end of the day to go to the barn. So he says, at the end of the day, they all go to the barn. So at the end of the day yesterday, I went up to North Beach to a certain restaurant I go to, the North Beach restaurant. What did I go there for? I went there for the food and to talk with my friend. I told you that. A couple of my friends will always come over when I give them a call. So I'm sitting outside of the restaurant. I had Teddy with me in the city yesterday. Normally, I don't take him to the city when I go to the... I don't like a small dog in the city. He had just had a bath the night before. This dog cannot pass a bush, a tree, a stump, a post, a garbage can without not only just peeing on it, but rubbing against it. He has like a... Something's wrong with him. Teddy's listening. So I want to take him to a therapist. The rubbing part. I don't mind the marking that males do, but he rubs. He rubs, rubs, rubs. So right away, within 10 minutes, the bath was ruined. And he starts to smell like, you know, a dog. It was horrible. So we get to the restaurant hours later. I'm sitting outside and talking to my friend who owns the restaurant. We talk about everything. It was one of those gorgeous days in San Francisco that you can almost reach out and want to hug. It wasn't hot. It wasn't cold. It was sunny, but the sun was already falling behind the buildings in a cool and nice breeze off the bay. And I'm sitting outside and I'm having, I don't know, a club soda. Yeah, club soda. I didn't want to drink. And Teddy has a bowl of water and we're talking about everything. Wives and children and the future and illness and mortality and no mortality and you name it. And laughing the way guys will do when they know each other a long enough time. And just passing the time. So I call up another friend. He comes zipping down on a motor scooter. He sits down. He orders a spumoni. Because Lorenzo said, I have many centenarians who eat in this restaurant. I said, what? He said, yes, I have a very high number of people over 100 who eat in my restaurant. So naturally, the question becomes, what do they eat? I don't ask that question because I'm a trained epidemiologist. And unless you have a sample of at least 18,000 people, the results will have no meaning whatsoever because it's a skewed group of people. But I'll tell you what came up in a minute.
Savage.
All right, so from a guy like me, some of my happiest moments are chatting with other guys over a cafe table and having a meal, watching people coming in for the night, observing people, sitting alone by myself. I enjoy that. So I'm up in front of the restaurant last night after the, you know, I didn't do the show, whatever, and I'm chatting away, this and that, about it. So my other friend comes over, this and that, and the dog is there and whatever. We're just having a nice, whatever, all about life. Just the way guys will talk when they really trust each other and know each other. So then I go in for dinner. It's now around, I don't know, early in the evening. The place is packed. I sit down, and I have Teddy with me. So I put Teddy between me and the wall. He sits quietly on the side. He doesn't bark. He's quieter than most people. And I say, can you get him a hamburger? Just give me a hamburger, no salt and pepper. He says, we don't serve meatballs. We don't serve hamburgers here. I said, okay, Lorenzo, I know. I forgot. So what can you give him? I said, give him some. He said, how about chicken? I said, fine, chicken, no salt and pepper. So he comes out with a plate of salami. He says, for Teddy. I said, Lorenzo, he can't eat salami. He says, no, it's a good for him. I said, don't tell me it's good for him. I'm not him. You're feeding him now like you feed me. You make me eat stuff I don't want to eat. I'm not giving him salami. I said, here, I'll eat the salami. Give me the salami. I'll eat a piece. So I did. I said, now give him a piece of chicken. I start with a calamari vinaigrette appetizer. So the dog is now, and the dog gets the chicken. Next, I order veal piccata. I didn't want any more fish. I'm reacting to fish lately. It's enough with the shrimp. No, since the Gulf of Mexico, I don't even eat shrimp anymore because it's all coming from like, you know, it's like sewer shrimp out of Bangladesh or Thailand. Could you imagine eating shrimp grown in Thailand or Bangladesh? Have you been there? Do you know how they grow the shrimp? Forget, I don't want to eat that. Okay, when I could get it from California, the calamari, I would eat it. I don't even know where that comes from anymore. Most of it's from whatever. So I get the veal piccata, no butter. I want potatoes, no butter, and I had some vegetable, no butter, blah, 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 no butter. And I can't drink wine anymore. I haven't had wine for years. I get sick every time I drink wine. I know it's like so déclassé. I lived on wine, so I passed the litmus test, the Mr. Sophistication, years ago. I can't drink it anymore. For like the last 2 years, I cannot drink wine. In the winter, I can drink red wine when it's very cold. Other than that, I drink beer. That's all there is to it. So here I am in this great restaurant drinking Budweiser with a great meal. I know the people are, oh, yeah, you know, the $200 bottle, $100 bottle, this bottle, that. Let them enjoy it. Good luck to them. Doesn't matter to me. I'm eating. And all of a sudden, a guy comes up from behind me and he says, excuse me, sir. He says, are you sure that chain is long enough for your dog? I said, what? So, what do you mean? I said, sure, he's fine. I thought the dog was to my right. I turn around. The dog had jumped up on a chair behind me. At the table behind me that was empty, a two-top, and he's sitting in the chair looking at us over the chair. And I realized what he had done. He wanted more food, and he figured he's a person too. In his mind, he's like us. So he figures if he sits in a chair, someone will serve him. You know, dogs are not stupid when you think about it. He didn't get any more food, by the way, because they'll eat until they die. Dogs, you know, will eat until they drop dead. They're not that smart. You could give a dog food, 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 and they will die. They will not stop eating. I've never seen a dog stop eating. You have to figure out what the dog is eating. Anyway, this is neither here nor there. I'm just telling you yesterday, that's all. Then I went home and went to sleep like everyone else and woke up with a hangover even after two beers. And I asked myself, what world am I living in that a man as deceitful as Barack Hussein Obama could still be president? How come they haven't thrown him out yet when he's sinking his own party? Then I said, wait a minute. Aren't you being too tough on him? Are you projecting your own reality on Obama for various reasons? Is it because you're a borders language culture ultra-conservative guy, and you think he's too liberal, or is he really as bad as you say? And I told you, he's actually worse than I say, incidentally. And that's reality. That's not just my perception. But don't call me about Obama. That's not the point. And by the way, I started today's show by talking about perception versus reality, right? And I give you this big thing on perception and reality and analysis. I know many of you said, well, what do you think you are, Saul Alinsky? You think it's too commie because what, Hannity doesn't talk about it? Because Glenn Beck, the professor, couldn't understand perception versus reality if you told it to him. Because the golfer doesn't talk about it. So I'm suspect now. Now I'm a communist because I talk about perception versus reality. I may be actually Saul Alinsky's brother. Chicago, Scott, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, hello.
Yes.
Tying in the concept of perception versus reality and why you're ignored by the mainstream media.
I don't even want to cry about it. I'm not even going to talk about me, but go ahead with perception and reality.
Perception reality is perception, shock jock, loud, even the name savage. I mean, let's face it, it connotes certain images, okay?
That's right. I'm a savage.
The reality is you are, if I may say, a brilliant guy who's able to tie these disparate thoughts, connections, ideas into a thread. And that is something that the golfer is unable to do, who just spouts the talking points of the Republican National Committee. the hemorrhoid with ears who is incoherent and, I think, losing his marbles day by day.
But wait a minute. He's got glasses now. I think that they're actually clear glasses. They're made to make him look intellectual. He wears them on the bridge of his nose. Why does he do that? Where did he get the idea that if you're smart, you have glasses? It's like the reverse of Pol Pot. But go on.
I think someone told him once when he was a young boy or something.
Oh, that smart people had bifocals on the end of their nose? You know, there's a congressman like that, a Senator, Levin. Levin has the glasses on the nose.
The famous comb-over.
Yeah, the Carl Levin, the great Carl Levin, the slumlord from Michigan. Please go on with your analysis.
Well, you know, here's my analysis, Mike. It occurred to me last year during the high holidays, for the Jewish high holidays, Yom Kippur and Rosh Hashanah. Your listeners may not be so familiar, but there's a ram's horn that's blown during that time. It's called a shofar. And it's during this time of year when it's done. And it occurred to me when I was sitting there in shul, that's Michael Savage. Michael Savage,
well,
is...
I'm a shofar? Now you're calling me a shofar or a chauffeur?
Now listen, it is a call to...
No, battle. I understand. It's the trumpet trying to the clarion, the awaken, the trumpet, right?
The call to battle. That's what it was originally. But it's not just that. It's not just that. It's a wake-up call to wake people up from their somnambulant sleepwalking state, their drugged state of mind. That is what you do with your shock. So the perception in part is the reality, but it's not the perception that drives it. It's the reality that drives the reality, and that's what you do. And that's why I like you so much.
Well, it's nice. Look, I have a loyal group of listeners. Incidentally, everyone in talk radio who has survived over a number of years establishes their own community of listeners. There's no question about it, and it's very stable after a certain point. It's consistent. It's an audience that doesn't go away. It grows. It rarely diminishes, unless the person becomes a total and absolute bore. And so we're used to each other at a certain point. I'm a part of the people who listen to me. I'm a part of their mental geography every day. And if they don't hear me, they don't feel that they've sort of lived that day. I'll give you an example. Like when I used to travel a lot more than I do, when I'd come back to San Francisco, I would immediately tell a cab driver in the days that I used cabs, turn on the radio, turn on a certain station. I want to hear a certain talk show host that was on at that time. Now, it didn't matter whether he was a liberal or a conservative. All that mattered to me is that he had been in that time slot for a certain period of years, and it was a part of my daily mental geography to hear that guy. You know what I'm saying? And I think that that's a part of what talk radio becomes in America. We're actually part of people's lives.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, no question.
So that's the whole story. But you are in Chicago. Is that where you are, Scott?
I split my time between there and the West Coast, yeah.
And the West Coast. So yeah. we wouldn't call you bicoastal. We call you what, half bicoastal or bifocal?
In the spirit of the hymn, bifocal.
Bifocal. All right. Thanks for the call. So what do you want? You want me to tell you a personal? It's summertime already. You know, lighten up. Lighten up. We know what's coming. In November, we're going to vote. In November, there's going to be a landslide against the Dems unless they bomb Iran, and then there may not be a landslide against the Dems. And then it'll be the best of times, and it'll be the worst of times. In other words, it'll be times very much like they've always been in some ways, you know, with him slipping in more Marxists in the middle of the night who want to take over more of your life. And little by little, we'll lose our sovereignty and our freedom. And one day you'll wake up and you'll be a prisoner in your own country. But don't say we didn't warn you. I told you from the beginning. When Obama started to appear on the stage, I saw by his inclinations, long before most people in the media, I thought he was more like Professor Pol Pot. And you say, well, Pol Pot, but he left a mountain of human skulls in Cambodia. I don't mean it in that regard. People say Hitler, this. Don't be stupid. Pol Pot was a college teacher, a professor in Cambodia. He went to Paris and he studied Marxism in Paris. He came back, he ran for office, he became the president of Cambodia, whatever they call it there, and he introduced Marxism to Cambodia, and he unleashed the illiterate peasants, the children, the 12, 13, 14-year-olds, with AK-47s, and they went around and they killed and they beat and they tortured and they murdered. Anyone with glasses was considered a counter-revolutionary. They lost their entire middle class. The entire middle class was decimated by Pol Pot's Khmer Rouge, red. They wore red Khmer Rouge, red scarves, and they were the communists. They were the brutal, vicious, killing communist youth of Cambodia. It resulted in 3 million middle class Cambodians, doctors, dentists, teachers, police, accountants. Anybody who had glasses was considered a threat to Pol Pot. Now you say, well, what does that have to do with Obama? The answer is nothing right now. However, when I see the man. And I see that he appoints one Marxist czar after another in the middle of the night, people who want absolute power. And when I hear his speeches prior to being elected, when he said he wants a private national security force as big as the U.S. military, just as well funded, all I can say to you is I've studied the SS and the SA, and I don't like the sound of it. And so that's why I'd rather talk about Veal Piccata and my dog than about Obama, because I've laid it out for you. In October, I think it's October 12th, my new book, I may as well give you the title because it's already up on Amazon. It's no secret anymore. It's on there so I can tell you. It's called Trickle Up Poverty. I couldn't believe that they already posted it 3 months in advance, but I did. This book best defines what I've been saying to you all of this last year and a half, if not more, about what we are facing and what's going to happen unless you wake up. And it's a great thing to have to show somebody else, okay? 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Let's talk about dogs. New York, Jim, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Mike, I just want to tell you, probably what Teddy is doing is he's masking his scent. I have a dog, a Chihuahua Pomeranian.
Wait, you mean when he pees on a garbage can or a fire hydrant or a or a shrub, and then he rubs against it. He's doing what?
Yeah, well, what dogs do? This is what the vet told me, because I just went through this last week with my dog. A lot of dogs are marking their spots all over, and what these dogs do is they're picking that up because their sense of smell is so great. And what they instinctively do is they try to, you know, rub themselves onto it and mask their scent so they just don't stick out predominantly.
So, in other words, the dog comes home smelling like a fire hydrant. Because he wants to mask his own scent, or he wants to mask their scent?
He wants to mask his scent so he could sneak up on prey. It's primarily...
Oh, okay. So like if a dog finds a dead a fish in the street or any kind of food item, he'd roll on it like that way so that the fish doesn't know that he rolled on it? I don't get it.
Like another dog?
Well, I can tell you, now I know why we're the master and they're the dog. That's all I can say. This logic doesn't work for me. It doesn't work. I mean, now I know why I hold the leash. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I'm glad he ain't holding the leash. I don't rub against things like that. I mean, would you? That's why they're called dogs. That's all. They're wonderful companions. But I got to tell you the truth. I had to wash the dog when I got home. I couldn't have him in the house. I had to get into underwear. I had to get in the bathtub with him. I had to turn the water on. I had to get the dog shampoo. I had to wet myself. I had to wet him. I had to wash him. All right. I love the little animal, so I didn't mind. I did for him what I never did for my own children. I'll admit it to you. You know, I never changed a diaper in my life. I don't know whether I'm sorry to admit it or I'm not saying I'm proud of it. It's the way I am. It's the way I was raised. My father never changed a diaper. I never changed a diaper. I walked out of the room. There was nothing more disgusting to me than a child's a diaper. I couldn't stand it. To this day, I gag if I'm around the child with a dirty diaper. I gag. And it's why you say to me, why are you... I will not eat in a restaurant with a coloring book. I don't care if it's $100 a glass of wine. The minute I see a coloring book, I leave the restaurant. I know I don't belong there. I know a lot of older parents now think it's cool to bring a child to a restaurant. They give them a coloring book. Some bring globes. I'm surprised they don't bring a tutor and a blackboard, you know, with a video, a whole video set up and do a whole lesson and you got to listen to. The worst people in the world are the 50-year-old guys who finally met a girl through youjerk.com or whatever. And they find a girl that way, another egghead. They meet each other, and they have one sickly little child who isn't fed properly that they raise on vegetarian food, and the child's dying for B6, carnitine, and iron. They raise their boy so that the boy probably could lactate at age 11 by most of these diets. They're so feminized. But they go in a restaurant, and they start giving lectures to the child, and you're nearby. You want to bang your head on a glass. They give them lectures. The child don't even know what they're talking about. And they want you to hear how smart they are, either through their child. I don't know what it is. I don't go to it. So you say, well, wait a minute, Mike. You're a big mouth. You have a talk show. The answer, I thought about that. I said, well, what grates me about a guy who speaks loudly in a restaurant to start with? Because I don't. I hate people who yell in restaurants to begin with. I don't mind a conversation, a nice, healthy din, but a loud conversation, terrible. So I said, well, why does that bother you? What are you, an egomaniac? Only you want to talk? I realized why. Because I'm on the radio. You're choosing to listen to me. You could turn this off. You could turn the volume down. In a restaurant, you're a captive audience. And these people know it. You've already put the money into the seat. You've already invested already. You're a captive audience. And those people who do it to you are abusing you in that regard. I don't know how to control. You can't control people. You cannot control people. They're going to do what they want to do anyway. But that's neither here nor there. We're just talking about etiquette and cultural mores. That's all. That's the whole story. You want to talk politics? All right. 1-800-449-8255. You want to talk dogs? Don't call me. I'm not the dog catcher, whatever his name is, the dog whisperer. I'm not into the whole thing with the dog cult. You know, I think about the Muslims and how they don't like dogs. You know, they have a point. Dogs are dirty, incidentally. You think about, do you know how many diseases dogs can bring into your house? Do you have any idea? There's a wisdom to it. That's why, I mean, I don't take a dog into the city but once a month maybe, but a dog walks around. He rubs against the garbage can. You want him laying down next to your child and giving the child an eye or ear infection? Or the dog, God knows what he's picking up on his feet or in his hair, let alone the lice or the, I'll make you all crazy. So you have to be understanding it's an animal at the end of the day. I'll be right back. perception and reality on the Savage Nation. I don't know what that has to do with dogs or restaurants or veal parmesan or veal piccata or beer versus wine or Gingrich versus Obama. But I declare that this is the Summer of Love Part 2 and that suddenly it's 1967. Once again, we have a Democrat president mired in a war that we apparently will never end. We have an economy in trouble, and we have people reverting to sort of the madness of the end of days with drugs, sex, and rock and roll virtually reigning through the land, but in a way I've never seen it before. I mean, you know, the 60s were one thing, but the porno today being so readily available, I would say that this country is more devolved than it's ever been in history, primarily because of the internet pornography scandal that the government permits because of the great revenue from it. I was reading last week that women are amongst a phenomenal number of users of internet pornography are women. And the number one country of accessing pornography is Pakistan, Muslim Pakistan. Would you believe it? In other words, the more repressed and the more hidden the sexuality is in the society of the person's life, the more they use internet pornography. So you could say, well, that's a good thing. I don't think it's a good thing. I think repression is very good. I don't have the liberal view that if it feels good, do it, let it all hang out. Look where it got us today. I think that a certain degree of repression is important for the advancement of a human life and the advancement of a society. In fact, I know it to be true. I think that the energy of repression can be used in more positive way, more in different ways. So you have a sexual impulse and you repress it, you hold on to it, you transmute it into something else. You sculpt something, you paint something. You don't have to immediately let it out of your body. That whole concept of the 60s of let it all hang out, it feels good, do it. It's a disaster. It's a disaster. And so I think that there needs to be a new discussion of perception versus reality with regard to repression. The word itself has a perception. When you say repression, you say bad. I say not so fast and maybe not so bad. That repression may be good. I'm talking about repressing your own urges. You understand me? After all, don't you repress urges to eat certain food for health reasons? Why not repress certain sexual drives for health reasons? That's not permissible anymore?
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Hear it.
Whatever happened to summer vacations? I was in a sporting goods store the other day, and it said, where will you find summer? I said, you know, it's true. Where am I going to find summer? A lot of people find it with high mountain hiking, this, that. I don't blame them. I don't know. I don't know where to find summer. To me, it's a transient thing. You know, I've always, even when I was 17, 18, I wrote the same thing. There is no such thing as happiness. There's moments of relative a lack of pain. That's happiness. It's a relative lack of anxiety is happiness for some for some people. I don't know if that's the human condition or some people are that way. They're tense all the time and then they drop dead. There's no fixing it. What are you going to do? Go to a therapist? Most of them are crazier than you are. What are you going to them for? They're lunatics. They're on medication themselves. They're going to help you. It's like the blind leading the blind, as they said. BP chokes off the oil leak. Now begins the wait. It's like a heart attack, right? They stop the flow of oil. After 184 million gallons flowed in after 85 days, and now they're waiting 48 hours to see whether the capped-off well would hold or a new leak will blow up further, a little further down. Now, that's very good news. I hope that it's true, but you know what it reminds me of? It's as though the Gulf had a heart attack in a way, because I remember when my father had a heart attack, God rest his soul, he died in 1970, but I was a young kid. I was in college, and he had a heart attack, and they took him to the hospital, Monticello Hospital, I remember, a little community hospital. It was during the summer, by the way, during a vacation. That's when a lot of people, by the way, get heart attacks. Strangely enough, they actually get sick during a vacation. I guess because they let go of certain constraints, you know, they have too good a time, drink too much, whatever. And finally, the occlusion breaks off and floats over to a narrow restricted area, and then you have the coronary occlusion. So I remember the doctor. Remember, I'm a kid, and no one really knew what a heart attack was in those days. The average family didn't really understand it like we do today. So the doctor said to the family, because we were scared to death, it was our father, number one, and number two, it was the father was laying there, you know, between life and death. So the doctor says to us, and the doctor was God then, not like today. I almost wish we were back to those days, but maybe it was too much energy invested in one person to begin with. The doctor says to us, and we're waiting on every syllable, because we're asking, will he live or die? The doctor says, well, it's like a blowout on a tire. We've put a patch on it, but we have to wait and see if it'll hold. I mean, that was like the worst news I've ever heard in my life. I never slept again since that day. I never again had a good night's sleep from the day the doctor told me that. I mean, psychologically, he put a patch on my father's heart. So he said it wasn't the heart, it was the artery. And we don't know whether it's going to hold. We have to wait and see. So every second I thought the patch would blow off and he'd be dead. I remember laying in the bedroom when he came home, God rest his soul. I think I developed this almost extrasensory ability to hear during that phase when in my little bedroom, which was on the other side of the upper floor, I would listen to him breathe in the bedroom to see if he was still alive. I swear to God, like my ears became like a wolf. And to this day, I have overly sensitive ears. So let's hope that the BP choked off the oil leak and there's not another, you know, another heart attack, so to speak, another blowout in another artery. You know, we can close this chapter. There's no political comment to be made from this. There were mistakes made all around. The federal government made many, many mistakes, and I can reiterate them if you care to, but it's boring. BP obviously made some mistakes, but you don't close down an entire industry. And moreover, 7 to 9 foreign companies have been drilling, countries have been drilling in the Gulf ever since the blowout, before it, during it, and after it. I didn't see any restrictions on their drilling because they're in international waters. So it's all nonsense. It's an attempt to grab another industry by Obama. You know that. It's the way Marxism works. So on that note, I'd like to open the phones up at 1-800-449-8255. You don't have to call me on any of these topics. We already touched the veal piccata. We touched the dog. We touched North Beach. We touched on the Spumoni. We touched on the fish. We touched on the allergies. We touched on the wine. We touched on Pol Pot. We touched on Marxism. I don't know what it is we haven't touched on yet, but it's the summer, for God's sakes. It's July 15th. I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to take requests. Make believe I'm a singer. And you've come to a concert, and I've already done the numbers I want to do. Now, what would you like to hear now? I mean, what do you want to do? Louie and the Monkey again? I don't know if I could tell it. I'm open to requests. People like family stories. So if there's something you'd like to hear, I will tell it to you. You want politics? You'll get politics. You want the personal? You'll get the personal. You want a healing children naturally discussion? You'll get that. You want to abandon Britain? I don't think you're going to get that. You know the story. You know the whole story. The best article written on it, by the way, and I'm not going to even talk about it, is on michaelsavage.com from Robin of Berkeley. The scapegoating of Michael Savage. I mean, I'd read it to you because it's so good, but then I would start to sound again like, you know, it's self-aggrandizing. People say, oh, he's making the most of it. I don't want to do that. I know how it sounds to most people. It's your problem, buddy. You got yourself in the problem. Don't bother me. All right, you want to look at it that way? I'll handle it. That's all. You want to help me out? Go help me out one way or the other. I don't really care. Read the article. I really don't care at this point. I'm used to walking alone. You know, I'm a one-man band in many ways. We all are. We're all alone. We're born alone. We die alone. That's the whole story. There's no such thing as community in this country. Maybe here and there, there are small communities of people in a church here or a church here and there where they love each other. But by and large, I've created a digital a nation on the radio. It's like, what do you call it? Would you say it's a digital? Well, we're not digital yet. All the radio stations are not digital. Are they all digital yet, Beowulf? I don't even know. No, they're still. I've created an analog universe. I have an analog community that I've created called the Savage Nation. And I don't expect people to suddenly get together like in the old days and, you know, one for all and all for one. It's not that way. You know, I've had very, very good fortune with radio as a result of my hard work and my talent and my unwillingness to quit and my unwillingness to compromise. So I've done very well. So you got to take the... Stop it, Teddy. You got to take the bad with the good. Things happen. And that's all there is to it. Life is not smooth. What, do you expect a smooth run? I mean, who has a life like that? So you have one thing, so something else happens. Do you take the guy who you think is at the top of the world? I don't care who it is. Teddy, cut it out or you're going to get fired. You're supposed to be the mascot. Now you're taking over the radio station. Let's say, I want you to, in your mind, pick a guy you think has everything in the world. Let's say a baseball star, right? I don't know who. I don't pay attention to the sport. But some people do. I hear it's a popular sport somewhere in America. Or a movie star. And they sign a $100 million a year contract. Or a developer. He made $1 billion. Or an investment banker. Do you actually think at the end of the day that there's no great balance in the sky? Do you actually think that they do, over the whole course of their life, have a better life than you do? Now, don't get me wrong. Okay, I don't want to be a Pollyanna about it. You know, like my mother used to joke around, rich or poor, it's good to have money. That was a standard joke. She's absolutely right. Rich or poor, it's good to have money. I've been poor and I've been rich, and it's better to have money than not have money. So let's start with that. But above a certain amount, it's really absurd because you don't know what to do with it. The fact of the matter is, above a certain amount, I don't know what to do with a certain amount of money above a certain amount. I wouldn't know what to do with it. What do you need it for? What do you think I am? A guy who needs an apartment in Manhattan to show off? I don't need that. If he wanted it, he needed it for a certain reason, for ego reasons. I actually don't need it. If I wanted it, I would have had it a long time ago. I could have it. I don't need a Fifth Avenue address to walk. Oh, there goes Michael. Hey, how are you, sir? Yeah, hello, dumb doorman. How are you? Limo. It's okay if you need that. But what do you need it for at the end of the day? I mean, if you have your health and you have your teeth and you have your veal piccata, what more do you need other than a toy poodle? That's really all you really need. So I don't know. What do you want to talk about? Anything you want. I mean, you can do it all. I'm a gifted man in many regards. I have a great voice. And as long as I have it and my brains are working and I'm going to take my show and I have a great audience, I'll be on the air. And then one day I won't be on the air and no one will remember me. Maybe years from now, oh, there was once a guy, he was really good. I don't remember his name. I bought all of his books. He was so smart. I loved his voice. I couldn't wait. But no one remembers anybody. It's a weird world today. It's not like, you know, you got to pay attention to like a religion like Islam, where they remember something that happened in the 1300s and they're willing to kill for it. Now that's what you call passion. How do you think the Sunnis and the Shiites came to hate each other? It's over some dissent from Muhammad, one, and he says, no, he was the one, he was the cousin, and they've been killing each other for 700 years over that. That's what you call passion. But we're not that kind of country. We don't have that kind of memory. We don't remember yesterday's hero, never mind someone from 700 years ago. You know what I'm saying? So you get used to it. You float with it. That's all. That's the country you live in. You have a bestseller yesterday. They don't remember you tomorrow. Take a look at a movie star like Mel Gibson. I happen to like Mel Gibson's movies. Every one of them. I've liked every movie he's ever done. I never watched Mad Max. I couldn't get into it. But I liked all of his movies. Okay, so now you got the scandal with the Russian hoe, in my opinion. The Kurv that they found. The Kurv from the gutter. And I hope he doesn't take it the wrong way. But to me, it sounds like it was set up. Yes, he went crazy. When I listen to the Mel Gibson tapes, and I've listened to them, I'm appalled and I'm shocked. I'm stunned, actually. But what I hear a wounded animal bellowing with a knife in his chest. I hear an animal who was sent a shot with an arrow and is dying and screaming out. And then I hear someone in this calm voice who's baiting him. Now, I don't know whether the tapes were doctored. There's something wrong with the whole picture. But who the hell has a wife who wears a wire like this? How can you trust a woman who, in essence, is wearing a wire on her own husband? And maybe I'm mistaken, but I understand this same wonderful, sterling woman, this poor victim of it. And she had another affair previously with a married actor a number of years ago and has a baby from that affair. So, you know, let's not stop it because she's a woman, she's a victim. All right. If he threatened to burn the house down, that's one story. If, in fact, this really occurred, that's another story. But number three, listen to the man's anguish from what she did to him. There's something more to the story than meets the eye, in my opinion. You want to talk about Mel Gibson? I guarantee you'd rather talk about that than Obama right now. I just know it. I'm positive you'd rather talk about Mel Gibson and the Russian hoe than anything else. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Well, you know, you got to listen to these tapes, the Mel Gibson tapes. They're frightening. She, the calmer she gets, and she's baiting him, in my opinion. She, the calmer she gets, and the louder he gets. But you could hear a man in such agony. Sounds like an animal that was shot. But think about what he did here. He left a wife of, what, 30, 40 years, six children. And I understand that he had a drinking problem when he was young, and he gave up the booze a long time ago. This is alcohol. As pure as I am sitting here, this is an example of what alcohol does to some people. His life has been fundamentally destroyed by alcohol. Now, you say, is that an excuse? I don't know. You decide what you want to decide. It seems we give everyone on earth an excuse, but not Mel Gibson, because he dared make a movie called The Passion of Jesus. Therefore, he's not entitled to any benefit of the doubt. But it's alcohol here. I remember when he had invited me to see The Passion of Christ in a private screening, and we sat through it together in his studio, in his office down in Beverly Hills. I think it was Century City. I don't remember where. I invited him out for a drink. I said, you want to come up for a drink or whatever? He said, no, I haven't had a drink in many years. I said, that was fine by me. Okay. Then, okay, we know what happened. They had the incident on the highway with Malibu, with the anti-Semitic outburst. Now you have this. It's all alcohol related. Justified, I don't know. Are you perfect? You've never had a problem in your life. So at this point, he's an actor. You know what? I'll still go to his movies. That's all. You know, there are actors I detest, and I go to their movies. I detest certain actors' politics, but I go to their movies. That's all. I tend not to boycott. It's as simple as that. Sometimes I don't go because I think of their politics, if they're too extreme. Like, I think Sean Penn is a good actor. I will not go to his movies because I think he's an absolutely evil man. For saying, for example, that Hugo Chavez is not a dictator, when Chavez just arrested someone for twittering against him, I will not go to a Sean Penn movie ever again. There are others in Hollywood. I mean, I know that they're lunatics, most of them. They're drug addicts. They went to the High School of Performing Art as a child. They were stupid to begin with. They couldn't remember anything, you know. And they were puppets. They were, by the way, they had very bad personality disorders. Most actors have a problem in that they don't have a firm personality of their own, incidentally. And they can only live through the role that they are given. And the worse sense of self that they have, the better the actor they are. That's been my analysis for many years. I actually once tried to be an actor in high school. I'll never forget it as long as I live. I remember reading the part. I don't remember what it was. I couldn't relate to it because I couldn't get out of being me to be the person. And I have another friend who, by the way, was a movie producer, a very conservative, wonderful man, who said to me he knew, I think, Ilya Kazan. He once rented him some space in Manhattan years ago. He knows everybody, this guy. He's been around forever. And he said, Ilya Kazan said to him, anyone with more than 110 IQ can be a fine actor. Now, I guess that means I don't have 110 IQ or something. I don't know. But I didn't want to act because I didn't like the idea of reading a script. You see what I mean? You can act if you want to, but it wasn't natural to me. I'd rather write my own script than read someone else's script. And I think that the more a person is without a firm personality alone, the better the actor they can be. Maybe that's not true in all cases, certainly. But let's go back to Mel Gibson. He's an actor. It's horrible, the things he said to her, the words. We know that. But admittedly, you've never heard that before. You never heard a guy say that to a woman before in your whole life. You never heard it. You just never heard it on tape. You never heard it on tape because most women have the decency not to wear a wire when their husband and them are having a fight. In other words, they don't want to undermine and destroy a man. She did this to destroy him. They obviously blackmailed him, and he said, drop dead, I'm not paying you, so they released him. This is blackmail.
Savage.
listen to this anymore.
You hang up. I'm coming over there.
I'll call the police.
What?
I'll call the police.
You. I'm coming to my house. You're in my house, honey.
Yes, but you, honey, don't call me honey. You just
call
me.
You're in my house. It's... So I'll call the police and tell them there's someone in my house. How about that?
You can do that. That's fine.
You. I don't involve the police in anything because I stand up for myself. You're weak.
Yeah, it's sad. I mean, the whole thing's sad. Domestic arguments are horrible when they happen, whether it's in your life or someone else's. It's not something to take pleasure in. And that she released this indicates that she recorded it for a purpose, which was to blackmail him, in my estimation. And he and his attorney said, no, we're not, you know, going to pay you. And they released him. So now how does she benefit by destroying him? I'd like to understand this. How does this woman benefit by destroying Mel Gibson? Can anyone explain that to me? San Francisco, Tanya, welcome to the program. What do you think about this Gibson scandal?
Michael, I heard what you had to say about Mel Gibson, and I remember when Alec Baldwin was caught on tape screaming at his daughter. And
yes.
The next thing you know, he's embraced by Hollywood. He's given.
That's right. You know, you're right. They circle the wagons around that D-bag.
Yes, and they give him a part on 30 Rock, give him some, whatever it is, Grammy or Emmy, and make a star out of him, and that's how Hollywood is. And then you have this Roman Polanski thing where they just adore him. I mean, Sigourney Weaver said, and I quote, Roman Polanski has suffered enough. And so here
I'll tell you about Sigourney Weaver, a story. I gave money a number of years ago to the Diane Fossey Gorilla Fund. They had the nerve to send me a letter from a form letter from her. I said, if you ever send me another letter from her, I'm not giving you another dime. I never gave them another dime. I don't recommend giving money to that organization. I also gave money to the International Society for Animal Welfare, and they moved an entire herd of elephants with the money I donated. Now, that's a reputable group. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. I understand what you're saying. Yes, Mel Gibson was targeted because he did a movie about Jesus. Isn't that what you're saying?
The Christ is a beautiful movie, and I think that's what this whole thing is, because they never forgiven Mel for what he's done, but they'll forgive anybody else in Hollywood for every cheesy, lousy, rotten.
That's right. Movie. When you think about it, Mel Gibson, as vile as his words are, actually did not hurt anybody physically. That is not the same as Polanski, who actually doped up a 14-year-old and raped her.
Exactly, Michael. And it happens time and time again in Hollywood. It's like Sodom and Gomorrah, San Francisco and Los Angeles, another Sodom and Gomorrah. They pick and choose who they want, and they won't admit.
Well, one thing is for sure is Mel Gibson will not be giving the valedictorian speech at the National Organization for Women University.
That, you know what else they did, Michael? When The Passion of the Christ was out, at the movies, there was a movie that was out with this Viggo Mortensen about the horses or something. I can't remember the title of the movie. But what they were doing is they were putting the tickets. When you bought a ticket, instead of it saying The Passion of the Christ, it would say this movie that Viggo Mortensen was on. And instead of Mel Gibson getting credit, these other movies were getting credit. And Mel
They ran the tickets for the other movies to deny him royalties?
Yes, yes.
Oh, my God. Well, look, as a woman, did you listen to the tapes as a woman, though? Don't you find some of his statements frighteningly offensive?
Well, yes, I do, and I think a lot of it had to do, everybody knows he drank and it had a problem, but everybody knew about Alec Baldwin's anger, and they ignored it and ignored it.
You raise a very good point. Alec Baldwin literally cursed his daughter out in a way that I thought was astonishingly horrible, and he was given a pass, and in fact, he moved up in Hollywood as a result. Yes, a lot of this is getting even by a certain subculture in Hollywood who does not forgive him for embracing Jesus. There's no question that there's the word I used once, we have Islamophobe, I call it Christophobic. There's no question this is Christophobic behavior. Thank you for the call. San Diego, Edward, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes,
Edward, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Yes, Michael, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, sorry. Just wanted to go on top of what you've said. I live in here in Hollywood, and it's completely alcohol-related, and you're right on about the Christophobia thing, too. But I've recently got sober myself the last 2 years. I'm 2 years clean, and I'm connected in the industry here that is primarily godless, you know, Christophobic, but I know from my own past and what he's dealing with. He got sober before, and evidently these are alcoholic rants. And
let's pause right there. Don't you hear the alcohol screaming and cursing there?
Of course, my friend and I the other night, and I don't want to give names here, but I don't think any of my Hollywood friends are probably the leftists are probably going to listen in. But nonetheless, he's a director, the studios were battling over going to finance this movie based upon his last comments of the Jewish rant.
Yes, right.
And they had basically settled on a budget, a figure, finally, with political arm wrestling and all that stuff. And then all of a sudden this came out, and it completely just took it off the radar.
Well, I want to remind the listeners of what happened. When these tapes were released last Monday, his agency, William Morrow, dropped them the next day. The principal in that agency is a man by the name of Ari Emanuel. Does the name Emanuel ring a bell?
Of course it does.
Sure, it's Rahm Emanuel's brother. Rahm Emanuel's brother was the president or CEO or one of the major league principals of the William Morrow Agency. They dropped Mel Gibson. So there's a very, very deep radical leftist streak in this anti-Gibson story. And at the end of the day, you cannot have sympathy for him. But on the other hand, if you hate him, what does that tell you about yourself? I believe he was set up personally. And I believe that most women listening to this show would rather him and know that she was the one who set him up for this. I want you to think about the whole picture here. He leaves a wife of 30 years. That's a mistake. That's number one. What a lesson this is for every guy with a middle-aged desire to run off with some Russian, or rather a younger girl. What a story this is. If this is not a lesson in life 101, my God, what is? Everyone has probably warned you what would happen. It happens to everyone who ever does, without exception. Their life ends in disaster. They throw away the old wife. They get the young wife. How long does it take until this happens? 6 months? 1 year? 2 years? How long does it take? What do you think they're after, your body? I have an older friend. I'm not going to mention who. An older man. Very smart guy. And he dates a lot of younger women. He happens to be very wealthy. And he says to me once, I said, well, why do they see in you? You're 30 and you're 80. What do they see in you? He says to me, it must be my body. And he laughs. He says to me, you know, Michael, he says, one thing I learned a long time ago, he says, to thine own self, do not BS. He said, I know what they're after. He said, but so what? He says, it doesn't matter what they're after. He says, everyone gets what they want. Okay, so that's one story. But here's a guy who fell off the wagon, got drunk, realizes that he made a mistake, left his family, threw away his life in essence. You know, in one of the tapes, Gibson screams out, we have no money. How could he not have money? It's the part I don't understand. How did Gibson run out of money? He made his film grossed $600-700 million, the Jesus movie. Where'd the money go? What do these people spend their money on? I don't understand it. I really don't understand. I know he didn't get $600 million from that movie, but he must have made a couple of hundred mil off the movie personally. Where'd the money go? Did all of it go to the previous family? I don't get it. But look, let's analyze what went on here. The relationship went sour. Okay, she had the baby. She had the meal ticket already in the form of the baby. That's the first thing, is the leg lock. The thing that the young guys have to remember is the leg lock is the first road to perdition, is the first step towards perdition. You feel that leg lock, you run like fire. I'm not going to explain in any details what that means. Beowulf, that's legal, right, what I just said? The leg lock. But that's something a guy will understand. If you feel the leg lock, you get out of there as fast as you can, because the next step is this. The next stop is this. So the minute the leg lock went in, he was finished. You heard of a headlock? There's a leg lock. A leg lock is another move not known to wrestlers. Wrestlers may know about the leg lock. But the leg lock is the road to procreation in many cases, especially when the baby is not really wanted by one party and wanted by the other. So along comes the meal ticket. And now the next step is, hey, I got you cursing, screaming, threatening on tape. The lawyer sends to his lawyer. and I want X hundred million or whatever. And he says, drop dead. I'm not going to give it to you because it's illegal to tape someone in California without their permission. So you could take it and shove it. And they say, are you sure that's how you want to play it? And they release it. Now, what do they benefit from this? I don't understand how she benefits. What kind of money can she get from releasing this tape on this guy now? How does she benefit by destroying him? I still don't get it. I don't get it. What? Oh, she's going to claim she was abused by him and therefore she suffered damages? And that's the claim rather than something else? I don't understand the world that I live in anymore. All I know is that the lawyers involved in this, unto the third generation, I only pray that doesn't happen to their children and their children's children. It should not happen to Gloria Allred or our children's children, what she's done to men. That's all I pray. Should not happen. You heard what I said? Should not happen. Pauline in New York, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. I totally agree what you just said. Basically, whatever problems they had in their marriage, if my husband was screaming at me the way Mel was, I would be screaming back at him, not sounding like Mother Teresa.
Yeah, why is she so calm? The more he screams, the calmer she gets and the crazier he gets. She was baiting him. She was pushing his buttons.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt.
Because when you're that sweet, but I didn't do that. No, I loved you. Why do you say that? I'm such a nice woman. You know, Prada shoe, nice hair, nice breast, nice butt job. I mean, come on. I mean, you could hear it all over this thing, what she was doing to him.
He was set up. I'm not dismissing what he said, but he was set up.
No, nor am I. I don't want to be misinterpreted. I found it to be shocking. But I also heard a wounded animal. I hear a man screaming like a big animal that was shot through the heart. I mean, his heart was broken. Wouldn't you say that, Pauline? This woman tore his heart in pieces.
I totally agree. I totally agree.
Yeah. What can you say? Look, passion is something, boy. It's what the Bible, you want to talk about the passion of Jesus. What did Jesus warn people? What does every religion warn a man about or a person? What is a religion for? It's to warn you what your passions will do to you unless you control them, whether it be Christianity or Judaism or Buddhism. I don't care what the religion is. It's all the same at the end of the day. It's all warning you about the same exact pitfalls of your own emotions, your own pitfalls. I love that Buddhist phrase, he who conquers his own self does not have to conquer a foreign enemy in that sense. The greatest enemy is within. You know that. We all know that. We all understand it. We call it 100 different things, but we don't really know what it is in our own life. Hollywood Hank, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Michael, you and I have something very in common. We both got dumped by CAA because of our beliefs.
Oh, you remember that? I lasted one day.
Well, I read that one day and I said, oh my God, it happened to my hero.
I was banned in CAA, right. I got to tell the story, Hank. Wait, then you're going to tell yours. I was signed up by this agency. And they, we're going to make you the biggest star in radio, and we're expanding in radio. And they took me out to that horrible Chinese restaurant, the worst in the world. Is it Mr. Chang's? Absolutely the worst Chinese food in the world is in Mr. Chow's. It's so bad that only people in Hollywood would pay $100 per egg roll. I never saw anything like it, but it's the place to be seen. So I was seen all right for exactly one night. So what happened to you?
I can't get into it too much, but basically it was hearsay of, let's put it this way, I'm a conservative that came from Columbia College in New York. They actually do put out conservatives other than just liberal nut jobs.
Right. And did you actually direct any major movies before the fall?
No. Basically it was the bait and switch. It was, oh, we're going to have you do this, we're going to have you do that, read the script. You know, everyone who thinks they get signed to CAA, they're going to be on the slopes with Jack Nicholson next week.
Right. That's right. It's all hype.
Yeah, but with Mel Gibson, listen, it's funny because my wife is from the Eastern Bloc, and we were listening to that the other day, and the minute she heard that, she said, that Russian host set him up. Without even a question.
Well, you could hear it. Anyone with any sense of reality knows she set him up because she's so seductively a pacifist in this. And you know, the angrier he gets, the more pacifist she gets. She baits him into more anger.
Yeah.
Well, wouldn't a normal woman's reaction be to scream back at him when he's saying such vile things to her?
Of course, but like you said, it's the alcohol. I mean, the wages of sin are death. He was sober for a long time. I'm sober for a lot of years, and it's a good thing to see because that's exactly what I said to my wife the other day. I said, you know what? he fell off the wagon with the anti-Semitic thing at Moonshadows. You know, he got a little tipsy, jumped off the wagon, ruined his wife. So exactly what you said is the reason I called.
Alcohol. Yeah, the alcohol. You can hear the alcohol talking. I pray for Mel Gibson, by the way. I'd hate to see this man hurt himself. I hope he's listening to the show. Mel, millions and millions of people are rooting for you. That's all I want to say. I'm telling you right now, you know, this guy has to be in agony in the sense that any man who's exposed like this would have to feel so ashamed of himself when he is sober that he would want to hurt himself. And any sane person would say, don't hurt yourself because you really didn't do anything so wrong. You certainly are not the criminal they're saying you are. And as a caller said earlier, what about Alec Baldwin cursing his daughter and the next day being rewarded by his good buddies in Hollywood? No, Beowulf, before we take the break, do you have that Alec Baldwin cursing the daughter tape? Play it. I want to hear it.
I'm going to let you know just how disappointed in you I am and how angry I am with you that you've done this to me again. You've made me feel like and you've made me feel like a fool over and over and over again. I'm going to get on a plane, and I'm going to come out there for the day, and I'm going to straighten your ass out when I see you. Do you
understand me? I'm going to really make sure you get it. When we get on a plane, I'm going to turn around and I'm going to come home. Savage.
Well, we have another Gibson Ho tape. I want you to just listen to this one. Listen carefully.
You're going to get to it. You know what? You're going to answer. One day, boy, you're going to answer.
Huh?
Bet.
What? What?
Nothing, nothing. I'm not the one to threaten.
I'm threatening. I'll put you in a rose garden, you. You understand that? Because I'm capable of it. You understand that?
Oh, God. Anyway, here's some good news. At least you see there's one woman in his life that's a solid woman, and that's his wife of 28 years, Robin, who, according to the website TMZ, reported that she's made a sworn statement in court saying that Gibson never engaged in any physical abuse of any kind toward her or their seven children. Now, that's a wife. That's a woman that a man should be married to. This other one, oh, my God. But look, what do you expect? I mean, what do you expect with a thing like fake everything, you know, from top to bottom? All right, fell head over heels in love with an image in his own mind. How did I start the show today? Perception and reality. Is that correct? Let's go back to how I started the show. Perception and reality. How we often distort reality with our own perceptions. What we project upon a politician, a talk show host, an actor, or a lover? Is it perception or is it reality? So let's go back to what I was talking about at the beginning of the show. Perceptions are not necessarily reality. He had a perception of her as Miss Perfect. Obviously, she wasn't Miss Perfect. And you now have a perception of him as the devil incarnate. But he is not the devil incarnate. The fact of the matter is, this is a complex situation. And the reason he's being smeared is because he was a Christian and because his father has right-wing Christian views and because he's not Alec Baldwin, who, although Alec Baldwin, with the tapes he played, cursed his daughter, threatened his daughter, etc., he was immediately rewarded by the vermin of Hollywood, while Mel Gibson, who made it on his own, is being reviled by the vermin of Hollywood.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
We'll be right back. She said behaviors. I'm a talk show host. There's nothing about my behavior. I've been on the air for 15 years, 3 hours a day. If those allegations that she made about me were true, I wouldn't be on the air in America. Moreover, she put me on a list with a Hamas murderer who bashed in the head of a four-year-old child in Israel. How in the world can she equate speaking with killing? Here's what's on MichaelSavage.com, The Scapegoating of Yours Truly by Robin of Berkeley. Her article is so good that it's worth reading. That's the best I could say. Let me read you some of it. She says, radio host Michael, she's a therapist from Berkeley. And here's what she says. Berkeley, California, you know where that is, right? What? Cows in Berkeley? Conservatives in Berkeley? Here's what she says. Radio host Michael Savage was my first conservative friend, although I've never met the man. When I woke up from liberalism 2.5 years ago, I had nowhere to turn. My friends thought I had lost my marbles. Having vaguely heard something about talk radio, I scanned my AM dial. I happened upon a cantankerous man with a Bronx accent bellowing that liberalism is a mental disorder. To my relief, I had found my first living, breathing conservative. Everything that came out of Savage's mouth offended me. He went on about feminized men, borders, language and culture, and other alien concepts. 1 minute Savage would scat an exquisite word jazz, and then he'd offer a recipe for his favorite spaghetti sauce. And when the topic turned to liberals, he'd erupt like Mount Vesuvius. To my tender, politically correct ears, Savage seemed like a madman. But in time, I realized that he was crazy like a fox. At first, I agreed with nothing Savage said except about Obama. There he was right on. Savage was one of the first to peg Obama as a socialist. He dubbed Obama the little professor a la Pol Pot. Savage predicted that quite surely Obama, like his Cambodian brethren, would turn on his own people. After listening daily for a few months, something shocking happened. Savage started to make sense. I reminded of that Mark Twain quip about his dad. And Twain wrote that when he was a teenager, his father didn't know what he was talking about. When Twain became a young adult, suddenly his old man made sense. Twain quipped that he couldn't believe how much his dad had learned in a few short years. Like Twain, I was finally growing up. Savage taught me about the perils of communism. He also opened my eyes to the gifts of the United States. All this was new and different. Living in the left-wing Berkeley bubble for almost 3 decades, I breathed in Marxism as seamlessly as air. Then she says, so it was extremely alarming to hear last year that Savage was being targeted for a public shunning by the British. Kowtowing to political correctness, the Brits were using Savage as their sacrificial lamb, apparently to placate the Muslims. And the new British conservative government plans to continue his scapegoating. She ends by saying the scapegoating of Michael Savage should serve as a cautionary tale to liberals. It should be the proverbial slap in the face to those still punch drunk on all that hope and change. Today it's conservatives, but tomorrow will be liberals. For instance, those lefties at Whole Foods discovered to their utter shock what it's like to incur the left's wrath. This is because the progressives are a bloodthirsty bunch with an insatiable appetite for power, just like their forefather, Pol Pot. Given enough time and opportunity, she said, the left has no qualms about eating its own. The whole article can be read on MichaelSavage.com. I got to tell you this as a side note. I know you listen because this is one of the last places you can get real, honest, independent conservative opinions and unfiltered news. And I want you to get the full impact of the Savage Nation. Go to TRN1.com, become a premium member, and get Savage Live, Savage Archives, and the Savage Podcast at TRN1.com. Click on my picture at TRN1.com today. Critics ask why Obama doesn't crack down on sanctuary cities. Why would he single out Arizona, saying that they're violating federal immigration law, when sanctuary cities have long violated federal immigration law? British Petroleum admits it lobbied the government over the release of the Lockerbie bomber. Did you hear this? BP plans to start drilling off the coast of Libya within weeks, despite calls from U.S. senators for a moratorium over the company's alleged links to the release of the Lockerbie bomber. Montana schools propose kindergarten sex education. That's amazing. That's amazing. An illegal alien raped a 14-year-old Texas girl. NBC and CBS won't air an anti-mosque ad. Europe warns Obama, relationship not working. Obama turns Gitmo into playground for inmates. MichaelSavage.com has Venezuela again, jails two Twitter users for false tweets. And Sean Penske says that it's not a dictatorship. Now, the issue of Roman Polanski. Did Eric Holder free Polanski by withholding certain evidence or certain papers? North Korea's national health care does amputations without anesthesia. Let me read that again. North Korea's healthcare system is in shambles with doctors working by candlelight and hospitals lacking medicine, heat, and power, and they do amputations without anesthesia. This is a perfect country for Sean Penn to visit and to declare it's not a dictatorship. North Korea would also be a great subject for Oliver Stone to do a film about and prove that Kim Jong-il is not a dictator. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Joining us now with the Savage Nation is Jack Hunter.
Good to be with you, Michael. Something I really wanted to touch on, being here in South Carolina, we have two senators. One is Jim DeMint, who a lot of conservatives admire, of course. He's a real fiscal hawk. And then there's the guy that nobody likes, at least amongst conservatives, Lindsey Graham. Well, Senator Lindsey Graham made headlines last week when he had an interview with the New York Times, and he had this to say about the Tea Party movement, which a lot of conservatives find encouraging. Said Graham, quote, "The problem with the Tea Party, I think it's just unsustainable because they can never come up with a coherent vision for governing the country." Graham added, "It will die out."
What?
Now, this is interesting for a number of reasons. First of all, let's revisit the last 8 years before Obama when guys like Lindsey Graham were in control. When you had President Bush, you had a Republican president, you had a Republican Senate, you had a Republican Congress. The Republicans were in control of everything. And what did we have at the end of 8 years of George W. Bush? We had doubled the size of the national government, the federal government. We doubled the size of our national debt. We expanded government with things like Medicare Plan B, with programs like No Child Left Behind, something John Boehner calls one of his crowning legislative achievements. That sort of gives you an indication of what was going on when the Republicans had control. But nobody better exemplified that brand of Republicanism, that Bush big government Republicanism, than Lindsey Graham. For Graham to say now that the problem with the Tea Party is that it's unsustainable or they don't have a coherent vision of governing the country says many things, but primarily he doesn't understand what conservatism really is.
Exactly.
Conservatism, if we go back to Barry Goldwater and just, you know, traditional conservatism is as much, if not more, about what the state should not do than any particular, what he calls, governing vision.
Why do you say that?
What I mean by that, if it's not the Constitution, our government shouldn't be doing it. The Tea Party, Graham's on to something here, that they don't have a coherent vision of governing in the sense that they don't like the status quo. What we have now is unsustainable. Lindsey Graham says the Tea Party is unsustainable. No, the Tea Party says the status quo is unsustainable. A $13 trillion national debt is unsustainable. Borrowing money from China to fund our own government, what we do here and abroad, is unsustainable. Social Security and Medicare are unsustainable. Lindsey Graham doesn't seem to get that. He also says in the New York Times interview, quote, "I think I'm where senators used to be." Well, you know what? Lindsey Graham is exactly right. He is where senators used to be, and I would add a majority of them, even in the Republican Party, still are. They are big government Republicans who don't get the Tea Party, who fear the Tea Party for all the right reasons because guys like Lindsey Graham are part of the problem. Graham would love to go back to a time when he could be in an election here in South Carolina, and many other Republicans would really would like to go back to this time, where you could be in an election and have an R by your name and beat up on the Democrat and maybe say, oh, I don't know, you don't like gays more than the Democratic opponent, or maybe you like guns a little bit more than the other guy. But at the end of the day, you spend as much money as any Democrat, you're for big government as much as any Democrat, but you could sort of play this conservative charade. You could fool your constituents. You could fool that voting base of yours. That, oh, I'm a conservative, and you don't have a conservative record to show for it, as Lindsey Graham never has. So what he says, when he's saying the Tea Parties are unsustainable, there's no coherent vision of government, is that he is really not going to critique the status quo. He is not really going to change anything. The New York Times article begins by saying, quote, "The Obama administration courts him. The Tea Partiers shun him. Lindsey Graham is right where he wants to be." Well, guess what? No doubt he is. Lindsey Graham facilitated all the big government deals that went down in the Bush administration. He was right there in the thick of things with John McCain. And now with the Obama administration, he's doing the exact same thing. The New York Times considers him a maverick for doing all this. It says, this year's maverick. That is completely absurd. The mavericks are guys like Barry Goldwater in the 1960s. A maverick would be people like the Tea Partiers, who are actually questioning things as they are. They are tired of politics as usual, business as usual, and guys like Lindsey Graham takes great pride in making sure politics as usual remains usual, if you get my drift. The entire New York Times article about Lindsey Graham is a guy who takes pride, he's proud of being in the center of things, the center must hold, protecting establishment interests, if you will. That is what he makes him afraid of the Tea Parties, rather. He does not want to have his feet held to the fire, and that's why he says it will die out and it's unsustainable. What he says about the Tea Party tells you everything you need to know about Lindsey Graham and his brand of big government republicanism.
Exactly.
The New York Times article, Lindsey Graham, of course, this has made headlines primarily because he said the Tea Party will die out. I think some of the National Tea Party or some of the, even the local different Tea Party organizations have demanded an apology, and they can wait forever. I don't think Lindsey Graham's ever going to give it to them. But, you know, Graham says this in the New York Times article, quote, "Everything I'm doing now in terms of talking about climate, talking about immigration, talking about Gitmo, is completely opposite of where the Tea Party movement's at." You know what? Lindsey Graham's exactly right. What he wants to do about climate change is cap and trade. What he wants to do about immigration is amnesty. The Tea Party does not like that big government status quo who wants to expand the government with things like cap and trade, who wants to hurt the American working class with things like illegal immigration. So he's right. He's not where they are.
Mm-hmm.
It's also worth noting that Graham, you know, here's a guy, this is how he touts his conservatism. He'll say things like, this is what the New York Times article says, "While the energy of Graham's intellect is hard to dispute, the nature of his vision is another matter. As his press office never tires of pointing out, the American Conservative Union awarded Graham a lifetime rating of 90. Now, my question would be, given that Graham is for cap and trade, that he confirmed Sonia Sotomayor, that he was for TARP and stimulus, all these, everything Bush did, Medicare expansion, No Child Left Behind, you name it, the big government agenda down the line, how does a guy like that get a conservative rating of 90 from the ACU, the American Conservative Union? That makes me question their methodology. Now, there's an Associated Press story that compares Jim DeMint, who is a true blue fiscal conservative, to Lindsey Graham in light of this New York Times article talking about Lindsey Graham being a mover and shaker. And the Associated Press article says, "DeMint, elected in 2004, is a major player in the conservative ranks. He is aggressively conservative and outspoken, but his influence doesn't translate throughout Congress because he hasn't shown the ability to persuade people outside of his ideology." Now, to a guy like Lindsey Graham, to any of these big government Republicans, DeMint is doing himself and his party a disservice because he's marginalized himself by being true to conservative principles. He needs to reach across that aisle like Lindsey Graham and John McCain do. He needs to, you know, to have a governing vision that sort of gets things done. That's exactly the opposite of what needs to happen. If Barry Goldwater has any claim on the conservative label anymore, and let's not forget what he stood for, true blue constitutional conservatism, a constitutional republic, if it's not in the Constitution explicitly allowing the federal government to do A, B, or C, we do not do it.
Right.
The idea that Jim DeMint has marginalized himself and he's not as influential as Lindsey Graham misses the point if you're a conservative. A conservative is supposed to stand his ground and to reject most of the big government agenda. If there's legislation that's outside the Constitution, if it costs too much, Medicare Plan B, stimulus, TARP, and I can say in this state, Jim DeMint did not vote for stimulus or TARP, and Lindsey Graham did. But that is the conservative's task. That is what a conservative is supposed to do, to stand against the big government agenda come hell or high water. And he's not supposed to be a facilitator. You're not supposed to reach across the aisle. For Lindsey Graham to say, as he said at a town hall meeting in South Carolina, that, oh, well, some of these crazy Tea Party people think Social Security is unconstitutional or Medicare is unconstitutional. Well, guess what? There's nothing in the Constitution that gives our federal government the purview to enact programs like this. They're not supposed to be able to do that. It's time to ask the big questions. That's what the Tea Party is doing. That's what genuine conservatives are doing. A, what should our government be allowed to do? Should we just go look at the Constitution? That's what most rational people would assume. And can we afford it anymore? A guy like Jim DeMint, by standing against what John McCain and Lindsey Graham and Barack Obama and Harry Reid, Nancy Pelosi are up to, is doing the task of a conservative.
Sure.
Guys like these establishment folks who say, well, I have a governing vision that's more coherent, are doing not only conservatives a disservice, but Americans at large a disservice by pretty much protecting the status quo. What everybody is upset about, you look at the Tea Party polls, I'm not talking about people who show up necessarily at the rallies and the movements, but Americans by and large sympathize with being disenchanted with the status quo, sympathize with the Tea Partiers more than they do either major political party. If establishment guys like Lindsey Graham can't get that through their thick skull, conservatism is going to find them one way or another, and they're not going to like it one bit.
Thanks for the report, Jack.
Well, as always, it's always good to talk to you, Michael, and if you want to learn about this and more, I encourage your listeners to visit SouthernAvenger.com. Y'all take care.
I'll be right back.
Savage.
All the stories have been told of kings in days of old, but there's no England now. All the wars that were won or lost somehow don't seem to matter very much anymore.
I'm continued to be banned in Britain. Joining us now is Umberto Fontova, who's written an article on Breitbart.com, talks about the hypocrisy of who they're banning and who they're inviting into the country. Umberto Fontova, welcome back to the Savage Nation. Give us the background on your article about the mass murderer Che Guevara's daughter being invited to England to promote hatred and murder.
I wrote about this last year because, I mean, it caught my eye right off the bat. I said it was funny because they were banning you right at the same time, in fact, like 2 weeks before, that they were throwing out the red carpet to Che Guevara's daughter. Now, a lot of people might say, well, so what, Umberto? That's the guy's daughter. You know, what's wrong with it? Well, she was going to Britain. Britain, London in particular, was throwing a massive celebration, the biggest celebration on the European continent, in their own explanation, for the Cuban Revolution, right? And Aleida Guevara, Che's daughter, was going to be kind of like the guest of honor. And she was going there, in her own words, to promote her father's ideals. And I said, wait a minute here, wait a minute, wait a minute. The same country is hosting this that is banning Michael Savage for so-called hate speech?
This is unbelievable to me.
Wait a minute. Anybody who has read anything written by Che Guevara, whose ideals his daughter was going to promote in Britain, you can't read through two paragraphs without finding the word hatred and hate and killing, you know, in at least three or four sentences. It was so absolutely hypocritically ludicrous that, I just had to jump on a story. Well, folks, let me give you a sample of what Aleida Guevara, Che Guevara's daughter, in her own words, was going to Britain to promote her father's ideals. Okay, folks, let me give to you some of her father's ideals from his own writings. Hatred is the central element of our struggle. Hatred that is completely intransigent. Hatred so violent that it propels a human being beyond his natural limitations, making him a violent and cold-blooded killing machine. We reject any peaceful approach. Violence is inevitable. to establish socialism, rivers of blood must flow. This is Che Guevara.
Oh, my God.
He says, my nostrils dilate while savoring the acrid odor of gunpowder and blood. If the missiles had remained in Cuba, the nuclear missiles, we would have fired them against the heart of the United States, including New York City. The victory of socialism is well worth millions of atomic victims. Apparently, that does not qualify as hate speech in today's Britain.
Sure.
And then lo and behold, as it kind of spun along, I had heard or read that some British officials, it may have been Miss Jackie Smith herself, I can't recall, had shown a bit of remorse over the decision. I said, well, that makes sense. You know, they're finally coming to their senses, and they're going to allow him to travel there, or at least remove the stigma that they've put on him. Lo and behold, just this week, I see that is still standing, the stigma and the ban, and by a conservative government. The Cameron so-called conservative is standing by the decision made by Jackie Smith last year.
Hmm.
And I'll tell you why those of us who have spent time under Stalinist regimes, communist regimes, find this so horrifying.
Why is that?
Because when I started reading why it still stands, it's because Mr. Savage has not retracted his statement. He has not repudiated his statements and so forth. And, of course, we're not even sure what, at least I am not exactly sure what statesmen those are, but that immediately clicked with most Cuban Americans and East Europeans who have experience in communism, because that is exactly the Stalinist tactic of forced confessions. I am not equating the British government with Stalin's overall, but in this respect, they do have some similarities. Because that exactly, if you go back to the Stalinist show trials of the 30s, that's exactly what the victims had to do. They had to get up there and grovel and pretend to be contrite and retract and sign forced confessions.
Right, right, right.
And then, well, Stalin still chopped off their heads anyway. So didn't make any difference. The identical thing happened in Cuba under Castro and Che Guevara. Che Guevara laid down his judicial process very quick in the game. He said, judicial evidence is an archaic bourgeois detail. We execute from revolutionary conviction. And we execute and imprison those who have offended revolutionary morals. Well, you know, that offense had a pretty sweeping definition. And so when you put that all together, the people who have experienced under that kind of government, and we see the British government requiring something very similar from Mr. Michael Savage, you go, whoa, what is going on here? You know, they're asking for a forced confession.
Exactly.
Arthur Koestler, famous communist renegade, he parted with Stalinism, but he was a communist in his early days, and he wrote, Darkness at Noon, some great books. He had a great quote. He says, Stalin tortured you not to force you to reveal a fact, but to force you to collude in a fiction. And there it is. That is exactly what the British government wants Mr. Michael Savage to do, collude in a fiction. The fiction that he spews, hate speech. And so Mr. Michael Savage, rather than doing what a lot of Stalin's victims did and what a lot of Castro and Che's victims did and went up there and groveled and confessed and signed confessions. By the way, a lot of them didn't do it. In fact, there are thousands of Cubans who refused to do it and served 20, 30 years in jail for standing up to him. But at any rate, that's what they're requiring, it seems to me, for Mr. Savage. And he says, no, you know, instead, you know, I am going to get proper legal counsel and present evidence to the contrary, that there is no reason on the face of the earth way I should be lumped together with actual terrorists, people who blow up women and children, and with neo-Nazis, people who advocate the extermination of entire races. There's absolutely no reason why I should be lumped together with those people, and I'm going to marshal forth the evidence why I shouldn't. Well, apparently that doesn't work in today's Britain. You've got to confess. You've got to do the little Stalinist show trial thing and get up there and act contrite and confess that, you know, in the case of Cuba and Castro, you had to confess that you were a Yankee spy or that you were a reactionary and all this stuff. And let me tell you, I cannot stress how it horrifies us who remember those trials to see this going on in the nation, you know, that spawned the Magna Carta.
Exactly.
You know, it's unthinkable. And probably some readers are going to go, well, that's about a sucking up to Michael again. Well, let me tell you why Cuban Americans have a special appreciation for Michael Savage. If you go back to the Elian Gonzalez tragedy, and that's what it was, 70% of Americans swallowed, I'm sorry to report, according to polls, at least 70% of those polled swallowed the Castroite propaganda line that the boy should go back to Cuba, that father was completely uncoerced, and 70%. Even some conservatives that I greatly admire, they fell for the Castro line. Not that their Castro lovers are coming, but they fell for it. That's the genius of Castro propaganda. Well, Michael Savage had absolutely nothing to gain at that time by sticking with the Cuban-American community. I don't think he was doing it to stick with us, but he was just sticking because of what was right. He says, wait a minute. Don't you people realize that father, Elian's father, has a gun held to his head? He is not acting freely. He is a subject of a Stalinist regime, the Castro regime. Why can't you people, Americans, wake up and see that man has a gun to his head? And let me tell you, we have not forgotten that, because that's exactly what we were saying, and we were puzzled. A lot of people said, well, wait a minute, is Savage Cuban? I mean, how does he know what's going on behind the scenes? How does he know that Castro is manipulating this whole thing? However he knew it, he saw through it. And, you know, that put him in a special place in the hearts of a lot of Cuban Americans. We felt besieged. The Cuban American community felt besieged at that time. As I say, 70% of America was against us. The entire Democratic establishment was against us, and even some of the Republican. And so those few people that stuck with us because of what was right, you know, we remember them.
Umberto, thanks again for being on the Savage Nation.
As always, thanks again, man. Hey, and hang tough on this thing. Hang tough. Don't do what Stalin's victims did, what some of Castro and Che's victims did, and give in and confess to something you're not guilty of. That's all I got to say, my friend. Hang tough.
I'll be right back.
Savage.
There'll always be an England while there's a country lane. Wherever there's a cottage small beside a field of grain, there'll always be an England.
Now look, if you haven't heard it yet, I want you to listen to part of an amazing article written by reporter Gina Miller on my being locked out of merry old England.
Dr. Savage has spent over a year fighting to clear his name from the preposterous inclusion on this list, but so far without success. And now it seems he will have to take his fight to the European Court of Human Rights. I wonder how they will treat him there. It seems to me that Michael Savage is a one-man example of America's freedom and exceptionalism. His love for our country is deep and quite evident when he speaks. He knows what defines a country, any country, its borders, language, and culture. That's the best, in a nutshell, description of a sovereign nation that I've ever heard. And it's pure Savage, the Savage we love. Long before he was banned in Britain, Dr. Savage was banned in America. What do I mean? As I wrote back in February, unless you are one of his faithful listeners, you might not even know he exists, because almost no one will mention his name. I'm not just talking about those on the left. We fully expect them to hate a truth teller like Dr. Savage. It's those on the right, with a few exceptions, who won't acknowledge him, at least publicly, that truly baffle me.
If you can call him a government, last time I was banned, the British media was following the story carefully, such as when I was on Sky News.
Why then, Michael, do you think, what's your reason why Jackie Smith has got you on this list? Do you think that there is a reason behind it?
I do think there's a reason behind it, but please understand, I never applied to come to your wonderful country. I haven't been there in over 20 years. My plant collections, I have a doctorate in art science, and my plant collections are in the Kew Gardens. I'm a scientist by training. I would love to go to Kew Gardens and visit my plant collections before I die, but I didn't apply for that. How did she get my sound bites? My show is not broadcast in England. I believe that some party in the U.S. took these sound bites out of context, sent them to Jackie Smith. She took them whole, broadcast them, and put me in a league with murderers. That's the error here. I don't know Jackie Smith. She made a big error. I want my name off the list. I'm appealing to Gordon Brown. I think Gordon Brown is a bigger man than Jackie Smith, and I suspect that he may understand that a terrible error has been made here. But this time around, the British media is nowhere. I wonder why. What was it that Voltaire said?
Voltaire? I always forget. You know, I may disagree with you, but I'll defend your right to say it.
Yes, that's correct.
Paraphrase him.
Well done, it was Voltaire.
Voltaire. Yeah. Wasn't that what my philosophy professor would be proud of me? Wasn't that what our democracy is based on?
Well, not really, is it? Because we have so many rules and regulations about what we can say, when we can say it, how we can say it, that we're so wound up with political correctness and fairness that what we actually do is, if anybody is likely, I'm amazed you're still on anyway, if anybody says anything that might actually upset
cruising
someone,
cruising here, isn't it?
someone, then they can't, because you might upset somebody.
Isn't that the truth? And the truth is that some conservative cable channels are drifting farther to the left each day. Listen to Judge Andrew Napolitano.
What President Bush did with the suspension of habeas corpus, with the whole concept of Guantanamo Bay, with the whole idea that he could avoid and evade federal laws, treaties, federal judges, and the Constitution, was blatantly unconstitutional and in some cases criminal. They should have been indicted. They absolutely should have been indicted for torturing, for spying, for arresting without warrant. The evidence in this book and in others is overwhelming when you compare it to the level of evidence required for a normal indictment, that George W. Bush as president and Dick Cheney as vice president participated in criminal conspiracies to violate the federal law and the guaranteed civil liberties of hundreds, maybe thousands of human beings.
Now, that's not an MSNBC commentator. That's a Fox News commentator. And guess what happened to far-left New York City Congressman Gerald Nadler? Listen to this.
Cab driver Abraham Habtab picked up Congressman Gerald Nadler at Union Station at about 2:05 and took him to this hotel on Water Street Southwest. Nadler told the driver,
I want to drop off my luggage in the hotel. I'll be coming back. And I will make another trip to Capitol Hill.
Nadler wanted to keep the meter running, one trip. The driver said, no, I stopped the meter, you pay.
And I insisted him to pay me. Finally, he refused to pay me.
Well, here's some of the news. Top Democrat fundraiser sentenced to 12 years. Backer of Hillary Rodham Clinton, Obama, and Kerry heads to prison for bank fraud. Shocking. Shocking. Here's another one just came out on WorldNet Daily. And FBI web links promote Bill Ayers and a convicted killer of two agents named Peltier. That's right. Unrepentant terrorists lauded freedom sought for convicted killer of two agents. So when you say the enemy within, or when you say the government's been taken over, you say, is that perception or reality? I'll let you decide. Finally, I'm Michael Savage. The U.S. spent $181,000 to see how cocaine enhances the sex drive of quail. And the man who did it, well, the NIH spokesmouth said that the research has value because many cases of HIV and AIDS are spread through drug-related sexual behavior. 1-800-449-8255. They apparently have stopped the oil spewing into the Gulf of Mexico. The question now is, when will Marxism stop spewing from the White House? Judge Andrew Napolitano, no relationship that we know of to Big Sis of Fox News, says Mr. Bush and Mr. Cheney should have been indicted for war crimes. What? Andrew Napolitano of Fox News says Bush and Cheney should be indicted for war crimes. J.P. Morgan Chase reports a 77% rise in profit. Banks are repossessing homes at a record pace, likely to top 1 million homes in 2010. Pentagon warns Congress that their accounts are running dry. Bill Clinton is back in the White House advising Obama on the economy. In a poll for 2012, Obama is trailing against Romney and Gingrich, and he's tied with Palin. I won't even comment on that. Gingrich, I would leave America. If Gingrich Khan won, I would leave America. Gangrene Khan. God in heaven. Oprah hits all-time ratings low. Mel Gibson audio release threatens to burn down the house. Have you heard any of that? It's shocking. It's disgusting. It's amazing. It's sad. He sounds like a wounded animal who's being set up. I mean, you know, he shouldn't have done what he did. But the fact is, I've never heard a man in such pain as I hear in Mel Gibson's screams. I think the tapes were tampered with. There's something wrong with that picture. Oh, by the way, one last note on global warming. A record snow has hit Canada. They're building snowmen up north. I think I should go there. Go to michaelsavage.com and sign the petition, will you please?